Today on Pilgrim Radio's His People, Kyla Gillespie on ministry to gender-confused youth.
I was so tired of feeling like I was living for other people. Like, I was about 30, 31 at the time. I knew it would break my mom's heart if I ever transitioned, but I wasn't willing to just live for her. I thought, in my selfishness, of course, that I would live as Bryson and be happy once again. And so I went through that process, and within probably a year, I started to pass as male.
Kyla Gillespie, next. International speaker and founder of Renewed and Transformed Ministries, Kyla Gillespie, says her highest hope is that God would use her story to point many to Christ. A biological female, her gender confusion led her to transition to live as a male. But she says by the power of Jesus, she was led to transition back to her God-given gender. She's author of the book, Transformed. Spencer Dahlke contacted her to get her story.
Your first chapter you titled Born into a Broken World. Tell us about how you remember experiencing that brokenness as a child.
Absolutely. So I grew up on Vancouver Island with BC and Canada. Those of you who don't know, if you've ever been to Vancouver, BC, it's about a 2-hour ferry ride from there to give you a little bit of a synopsis of where I grew up. But it was beautiful, full of lakes and ocean and everything. And I grew up in a Christian home. Both my parents felt that raising my brother and myself in a Christian home was the best for us. And so we went to church every day as early as I can remember. You know, I don't know what time in my childhood that I believed, but I did. I just loved Jesus and believed right away. There was two particular moments in my childhood that I mentioned that have a significant impact in my childhood. And one of them was, we were huge Vancouver Canuck fans. My dad's side of the family was very athletic, and actually, so was I. So I wanted to play hockey like my older brother and my cousin, my male cousin. But my parents put me in figure skating, which is a great sport, but it just wasn't hockey. And there was one particular moment at 5 years old when we got to a cold rink and we were ready to go. It was St. Patrick's Day, and there was going to be a little production that we would be in. And my parents pulled out this green tutu. And of course, I was born in 1980, so this was like 85. There was no conversations happening like we do now about sexuality or gender or identity and that kind of stuff. I just looked around and knew I didn't feel comfortable in a tutu. And all the boys around me were wearing like these nice green tuxedos with this bow tie. I just remember feeling very uncomfortable and not understanding. I begged my parents to put me in hockey like my older brother, and finally they allowed me to play hockey. And there was another specific moment as I was getting ready, probably a few months into my season. My parents came to me and said that some of the coaches and parents have asked that I start changing in a different dressing room. I remember this specific thing, like, why can't I just be normal like the other boys? Really imprinted in my mind at a very young age. So because you're a kid, you can kind of put it behind you and keep going. But I was labeled a tomboy growing up, and I just grew into that identity.
As you were navigating these feelings and experiences, at what point do you think you really started recognizing that this was a struggle against your identity as a woman?
Right. It probably wasn't till later in my teens, young adult life that I really realized where some language met my experience. Because at 14 at youth group, around 13, 14 years old, I noticed that I was same-sex attracted. And of course, I didn't have any idea what that meant. I grew up in the church, loved Jesus, wanted to tell everyone about him. However, my friends were attracted to the opposite sex, and that wasn't the case. I ended up being attracted to this one good friend of mine, a girl at youth group. I felt really uncomfortable, a lot of shame and guilt. I had heard about homosexuality in the Bible through growing up in the church, and I concluded that something must be deeply wrong with me. And I would ask God to take these feelings and thoughts away, but that would probably be a moment where I was like, I wish I was one of the boys so that this girl would like me.
You describe that your parents at one point decided to get a divorce. How do you think that that experience affected your thinking about who you are?
Yeah, it did have an impact. I remember my parents again at 14, so your pivotal years as a teenager, a very important years as a teenager. My dad was like my biggest fan. He would come to every hockey game. I played baseball, volleyball, basketball, any sport you can imagine, and he would take me to everything. Growing up, he was really my hero. I wanted to be like my dad. So when my parents came to us at 14 and told us that they were going to get a divorce, this shook us, my brother and I, because we had never seen our parents even argue in front of us, let alone divorce and separation. Those were pivotal times when I needed a father and I needed a mother. And within a year of their separation, my mom met a man and ended up getting married to him, but he didn't believe in Jesus. He wasn't a Christian at all. And so that was a really dramatic shift, because here we were growing up in a really good Christian home and everything was, you know, we abided by the Bible. Like, what does the Bible say to us as we live as Christians? And so that was just totally confusing. Let's just put it that way. And then my dad, probably about maybe 6 months to a year later after my mom got married, he met a woman at church and she ended up having 5 kids. And that was my stepmom. I had to choose who I was going to live with, either my mom on weekdays or my dad. And it really tore me apart because I love both of them and I had to choose. And I knew I couldn't love both of them equally if I had to choose one or the other for more days. But I ended up choosing my mom and I would go to my dad's on weekends. And soon after, you know, I was sharing a room with my stepsister, which I was super excited about. I had never had a sister before and I thought this could be really fun and amazing. However, every time I would go back and forth from my mom's to my dad's, I noticed that stuff in my room was just starting to disappear. Until one weekend I came over to my dad's and everything was gone except for my bed. And in that moment, I frantically went looking around the house for my stuff. And I ended up in the storage room in the basement and I saw all my stuff in boxes. And so that threw me off. It's like, I don't feel like I'm welcome here. Gender confusion was happening within my life at that time, but like I said, no language around it at all. So I wouldn't have been able to specifically say this is gender dysphoria until later on. And one day I went to my mom's and I was crying to my mom and I said, I can't go back to dad's. Can I live with you full time? And so, of course, she said yes. And that would be probably the last time I ever went to my dad's. And it broke my heart. And from there, we just had a really broken relationship and it never did get mended at all.
I've heard that girls' relationships with their fathers can be very, very formative and very protective even in Absolutely. A lot of ways. So for parents who might be listening, looking back, do you see things that your parents did that were helpful and a comfort to you as you were like wrestling with these identities and things that weren't as helpful?
My parents allowed me to be who I was, really. Like, they didn't put rigid stereotypes onto me, so I was able to be athletic. But I really grabbed onto that identity because it made me feel more comfortable in my own skin. So I would go to my brother's room and I would steal his baggy clothes and I would put them on. And that would just be how I felt more comfortable as a woman, as a girl. And so I would say that the divorce of my parents shaped a lot of my pivotal years as I started to grow up. And I think for me, what ended up happening is I became really, really angry. And that wasn't something that I was. I was gentle and kind and really loved Jesus and just wanted to help people and be around people. I love people. So this anger that crept up deep inside of me, that came from the feeling of abandonment from my father, which later on would fuel a lot of the choices that I made, starting to drink at 19 and so on. So I would say that it's very important for a family to be united as one, to have a mother and a father that can shape your identity. Not saying that just because you're a Christian family and you have what looks like a perfect relationship between father and mother and children is going to end up where your children don't experience gender dysphoria or same-sex attraction. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that it is important in those years to build relationship and to have those two figures in your life.
As you were getting older, you write about pursuing hockey professionally. And well, I'd love to hear about that, but tying in from your last point, you mentioned, you know, rejection from your father is really formative, really hard. You also write that there came a point when it felt like your prayers were not being answered, that like God was maybe tired of like hearing you pray. Can you tell us about like some of the events that led up to that and how that formed you?
Very young age, when I noticed that I was attracted to my girlfriend that I had at youth group, I would go home every single night and I would be in tears and I would cry out to God and ask him to take these feelings and thoughts away. But that's not part of my story, which you mentioned. He didn't take them away. And now I can see in hindsight the work that he did in my life in order for me to completely surrender to him using all those things. But for me, it was very devastating when I had wants and thoughts and feelings for the same sex when I didn't desire those feelings and thoughts. And so I did wrestle with God a lot. Looking back, I can see I had this distorted view of God's character and his love for me, because what I thought back growing up in the 90s is we look good on the outside, but let's not talk about what's broken on the inside. And so I thought that God was angry at me. I thought that he was disappointed in me. And I thought that I had to clean up myself before I could come to God. Obviously, that was years and years before God would actually show me his true character, his true love, and the real gospel, where we don't have to clean ourselves up before we come to Jesus. He actually takes our mess and he gives us his righteousness and his life. And then we use this big word, sanctify, but throughout the years, he starts to make us more like Jesus. And I didn't understand that at that age. I just felt like God was tired of, you know, dealing with my same-sex attraction, dealing with my cries to him, and I didn't feel like he was there for me.
It's heartbreaking because what you describe, I think it's really easy to think I am the only one that like experiences this, but it's not true. Like if you talk to people, right. Like I struggled with that at times, mm-hmm. and I'm sure any number of Christians, in fact, I bet all Christians at some point have felt that maybe God isn't listening, God doesn't care,
yeah.
God wants us to clean up first, and a God of law, which he's not, so praise
right.
God, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, when we get that distorted view of his character, we don't understand how, you know, we come to him and he meets us in our brokenness. Really, like over the last 9.5, 10 years of my detransition, is just understanding how much he cares and loves. And he promises that he, even when I don't feel his presence now for moments and seasons, I know that he has promised that he will never leave me nor forsake me. And so I can cling to those in my desperate times now, but I didn't know that as a child.
Can you tell us a little bit about your hockey years?
My grade 12 year, living with my mom on the island, I had some friends from summer hockey camps and stuff. And a couple of them on the island were playing in Vancouver, which, you know, it's a 2-hour ferry ride. So it was quite the travel. However, this was called Triple A Women's Hockey Team, which means that it was the most elite in Vancouver at the time. I talked with my friends and met the coaches and tried out for the team, and I ended up making it, and I would travel back and forth in my grade 12 year about 3 or 4 times even on the ferry just to play there. Because what my friend said is, if you want to get scouted for college or university or even the National Women's Training Program, if we win our area in BC and Canada, then we go to what it was called the Women's Nationals. And that's where the Canadian National Scouts were. I ended up playing. It was the first introduction into the LGBTQ+ community that I had ever experienced. I was so sheltered, you know, in good ways, though. Vancouver Island is smaller than Vancouver, and I never had any gay friends or anyone that identified as lesbian or gay, whatever it is. And so I met quite a few more, what would they call in the LGBTQ plus community, butch women. And I was like, there is an experience and a language to all the dysphoria and the feelings of being uncomfortable in my own skin. And now these women are presenting themselves as more masculine. And I feel like that is me. I thought they had this freedom to express themselves. And I wanted what they had, yet I still love Jesus. And I would tell them that, no, I'm not gay. I love Jesus. And so from there, and probably ended at 19 years old, that group, I ended up getting scouted to the National Feeder Program for the Olympic women's team in Canada. I started to train full time in hockey, and that became like my focus, my passion. My identity was like Kyla Hockey. I could be let down by people and be abandoned by my father, but if I perform at a highest level and I impress the scouts and I score goals, then I have some kind of fulfillment that someone needs me. And that's what I really gripped onto in my probably like 19, 20, 21, 22, as I was trying to follow Jesus, but I wasn't going to church. And so I knew that I missed going to church, but it didn't really seem like church fit into my life, because in the back of my head, I was like, well, I think I'm gay. And I think I'm maybe even, the word came in later on, transgender, because I experienced these things that the other women are experiencing. And so there was a lot of wrestle in there. And then being estranged from my father, I remember growing up and, you know, alcohol wasn't a problem. It was like people would invite me to school parties and everything, and I would easily say, no, thank you. I'm training for hockey and baseball and basketball. I don't need to drink. But at the age of 19, being so broken away from home for the first time, I took my first drink. And from there, it just grew into alcoholism. I didn't realize probably for about 11 years after.
My guest today is Kyla Gillespie. She is founder of Renewed and Transformed Ministries, as well as the author of Transformed, The Power of God's Word and God's People in One Woman's Journey Through Gender Confusion, Reassignment Surgery, and Detransitioning. You write about a number of relationships that you made with different various women. You perhaps alluded to some of them there, but just walk us through what your transition journey looked like, and how did you break that to your parents? What did that look like for you, and what was that experience? Describe it for us.
Yeah, there was so much brokenness in my life. I drank, and when I drank, I was angry because of all the pain that I had and the abandonment of my father. And through the 11 years of being an alcoholic, I really ruined every relationship. So I came out as gay when I was 23 because I was so tired of fighting the feelings and all these things that, where are you, God? Why can't you heal me of this? And so in my desperateness to just be free of the anxiety, the angst of, you know, fighting the tensions really of fighting this, I saw it so black and white. It was either I could follow Jesus in this direction, or I could go down this direction, come out as gay and live that life. And being so broken, I chose that life. In those moments, it was about 11 years of alcoholism, and I had hurt every close relationship with the women that I was with, which I explain in the book. The relationships were broken because of my drinking. And so in 2011, being depressed and broken, I had met other transgender people quite a few years later who now had language for what I thought I was experiencing. Oh my goodness, I'm seeing them transform in front of my eyes, and I want that, because I wasn't following Jesus. And so 2011, I came into Recovery House, which had 14 women in it, and it was a Christian facility. My pastor growing up led this ministry at a church. I really sought counsel from him. And the biggest thing that we needed to tackle at that time was my alcohol. And if we tackle that, then maybe we can then go into your gender and your sexuality and all that. But that was the biggest hurdle, is we needed to get rid of the alcohol in order to process and heal in other ways. And so I went into recovery and I met a woman and we ended up engaged. But that process in 2011, I told her, that I was going to transition from female to male, from Kyla. And the chosen name I chose was Bryson. And she said, that's not a problem. I'll love you either way. And so I continued in that relationship and pursued transition. And I pursued it by getting on hormones, which was testosterone. And then from there, I had some surgeries. It was a hard time for me. However, I was so tired of feeling like I was living for other people. Like I knew I was about 30, 31 at the time. I knew it would break my mom's heart if I ever transitioned, but I wasn't willing to just live for her. I thought in my selfishness, of course, that I would live as Bryson and be happy once again. And so I went through that process. And within probably a year, I started to pass as male.
Mentioned you were in like this, you know, facility to recover from alcoholism. And, you know, it's interesting, the ministry opportunities, perhaps. I think you mentioned you lived 6 years as a male bodily. Do you see that time before playing a role in your decision to detransition?
You know, I knew the truth and I knew I wasn't living a godly life, but I also didn't want any relationships with Christians who would tell me that I'm not living the life that God had planned for me. And that was like subconscious, but also because I grew up in a Christian home, I knew that that wasn't okay. But I really did suppress it in order that I could live as transgender. I didn't really understand the depth that I did after about 6 years of like what God is actually asking us as Christians. And are we willing to surrender in obedience every area of our life, like our sexuality, our identity, our gender? So I didn't really have a concept of that. Later on, I was hungry for Christians and a church to be like real, like to actually love Jesus with all of their life. Like if that is how the church is, then I want to be part of that. Early on in my transition, I didn't desire to follow Jesus. So I didn't desire any of living as female or living according to how he said. It wasn't till later in my transition, probably 5 years, until new people took over the ministry, because I was going to this recovery ministry. The facility that I ended up going in, they had men's houses and one women's house, and they would participate in this ministry called God Rock on Saturdays. So I had been going there for almost 5 years until the encounter with my Jesus friends.
Tell us about some of those Jesus friends and how God arrested your heart.
I met Pastor BJ and his wife, Jess. And it was a really crazy moment when I met Jess, because I had been bullied going to the ministry, not the ministry itself, that was great, but a certain person started to make my trips to that ministry really difficult before and after. And so I had decided that I was never going to come back. And I was sitting in a chair and I was crying because I loved the ministry, but I didn't want to come back because of the bullying that I was receiving as a trans person, actually. I just see out of the corner of my eyes this young woman coming straight at me. And in that moment, I thought to myself, okay, you've got two options or maybe more. You could either run as fast as you can and get out of there before she reaches you, or you could sit, stand your ground, and actually hear what she has to say. And I explain this in the book. Meeting Jess that day changed the trajectory of my life forever. And it was that one encounter and that one person that had intentionality to sit beside me. We don't remember what we talked about, but I just remember thinking, okay, maybe I will come back to this ministry once again, even though I'm getting bullied, because maybe these people are real and I need to see this. And so I did. I ended up coming back going, okay, well, she was nice to me the first time. I wonder how she's going to treat me the next few times. And they always proved to be such a loving and caring people. They started opening up like community groups where we would open up the Bible and we would start to like share our lives with each other. And I started to get to know them, and they would be vulnerable with me, sharing parts of their testimony of brokenness and how God rescued them out of that brokenness. And I started to watch their lives, and these were real people. Like they wanted to follow Jesus with every area of their life, exactly what might draw me back to Jesus. I was still pretty soft to the word of God, but I was living this secret life because they didn't know I was transgender. At 5 years, I had a full beard and I passed as male and I went by Bryson. They didn't have a clue when they first met me that I was transgender.
There's obviously more to your story. You've, you know, obviously come to know Christ. Assuming someone is listening to our discussion, an unbeliever, maybe they might think this is just more Christian propaganda. We just want to like silence the LGBTQ community. What would you want to say to this person?
Like you said, there's definitely more to my story and my testimony. And I hope that, you know, someone listening and watching this will pick up my book, Transformed, and read my life story and how I met these people and how they changed my life. What I started to see is that they wanted what was best for me. And what I mean by that is they wanted what God wanted for my life. And when I realized that it wasn't God that was restricting me from all these things, it was actually God who loved me so deeply and so intimately that he wanted me to flourish and have my greatest joy and satisfaction found in him, the creator who created me with purposes and with plans. Honestly, at first, it was through my friends. We walked it out for a year and a half together, and God started just to convict me through his word, through the church, through prayer, circumstances, and he met me in such a powerful way. What I can say is when the living God meets you and reveals himself in that powerful way, which he did to me, you know, almost 9.5, 10 years ago, I just couldn't stay the same. I realized that I was living against God's design and purposes for my life. And there's lots of reasons how I came to that conclusion through the word of God and his people. However, for that person that might be questioning, like, I love people who are in the LGBTQ plus community and Jesus loves them more than anything, because he came and lived the perfect life and died on the cross for their sins and for mine and for yours. It wasn't just a particular people that he chose that have their life together. It was the broken and the lost and the hurting that he had compassion for. And so I want you to hear that. Like, I want what's best for you. And in that, if you do believe that God is the creator and his word is alive and breathing and it has authority for how we live our lives, it's not because he wants to restrict us from things. It's because he wants you to live the fullest for him and with him. And so I hope that this gives you hope, even realizing that I thought I was too far gone for God to ever reach me. And I thought definitely I could never detransition because I didn't know at the time, and no one did, not even my doctors, if I would ever look female again. But the thing is I realized that it didn't matter if I wasn't following Jesus. And so as I follow Christ now, I experience still a little bit of gender dysphoria and still same-sex attraction. However, he's healed deep areas of my life, my heart, my experiences, and my soul. And so I can come to him with my wrestles and struggles, and he has big shoulders for those things. So don't feel like you can't go to God and wrestle with him, because I believe you can.
You've been listening to His People. Many thanks to today's guest, Kyla Gillespie, founder of Renewed and Transformed Ministries and author of the book, Transformed. Coming up on tomorrow's program, it's Stan Doriani on the Transfiguration.
He says, by the grace of the Father, I'm going to let you see my transcendent, pre-existent, divine glory. That's what the Transfiguration is. It's a magnificent encouragement to the disciples that he is the Christ, the Son of the living God. And yes, he's going to die, but you're going to have this vision. I'm giving it to you now, and you're going to remember it. So Peter writes about it. You know, we remember, he remembers. He goes back to it in 2 Peter chapter 1. You're going to be able to hold on to this in the worst hour.
That's tomorrow at the same time, right here on His People. Thanks for listening.